You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 22, Ren. There were so many things in Ren's life that were dangerous. It was second nature for her to look for the exits, to make a backup plan for the backup plan, to check for the knife in her pocket. She did not even feel the burden of her own thoughts on her back. They were just there, part of her, quietly buzzing away in the back of her head, making her count the number of people in the room. But when she danced, she was free of the noise. She had no choice but to kick the dead, oppressive weight of her anxieties aside and focus on what was in front of her. The music, the feel of her feet as they touched the ground, the bend of her waist around her partner's hand. She had lived for 26 years. She had a pulse. Her skin was warm. Death had not yet claimed her, but when she danced, it was one of the few times she felt alive. At least, normally, that was how dancing was for Ren. They had opened the floor with the Fairy Dawn, a dance that was known for its quick steps and lively beat. It had been easy to lose herself in the sharp notes and the movement of her body. But then the music changed to something slow and seductive. The dance became calm and calculated, and Ren's feet had come crashing back to the earth. Brenora was leaving tonight. They all were leaving tonight, and if she did not find that necklace before dawn, she was going to be in Altair on her own. Ren had not realized how much comfort she had taken in their informal alliance, in the fact that there were four other people who might notice if a mad princess dragged her down to the dungeons to play. And they were worried about her leaving. At least, Serafina was. When Serafina had hugged her, she had slipped something into Ren's hand, and it was not until Ren had walked away that she had looked at the charm. She could feel it dangling around her wrist as she brought her arms above her head and spun on her feet. The same charm that had whistled at the poison in the sugar this morning. She had given Ren her own charm without a second thought.
Are you all right, Demoiselle?
Zithril asked, breaking into her thoughts and pressing into her back as the music brought him closer. Fine. Why? Is my dancing not up to your royal standards? Ren teased, forcing herself to smile as she did a slow circle around his body, fingers lightly playing across his chest. He grabbed her hand and spun her into him. They were standing chest to chest now, his hand dangerously low on her back, the heat of his groin pressing into her abdomen, his crystal blue eyes staring straight into her mind.
You are still the most beautiful dancer here, but I think we both know you are thinking of other things.
I guarantee that you have my full attention now, Ren laughed, putting a little heat into her gaze.
Yes, but how long will I be able to keep it?
Zithril asked in a mock pout, pushing her away only to once again reel her back when the music demanded it.
Perhaps I should ask Levra how to keep your mind from wandering.
Ren blinked, mind racing, trying to place the name. She got there a second too late. Zithril had already spotted the confusion in her face, and he smiled in satisfaction at seeing her caught in the trap.
So, it would be awfully hard to speak to a man who does not exist,
he whispered in her ear, bending her backwards as the music reached its climactic end. The ballroom applauded as the prince brought Ren back to her feet, and Ren tried to stay smiling as her mind screamed. She was caught. She was caught by the prince of the kingdom whose sister had poisoned her that morning. She was caught and powerless, and her only allies were leaving in the morning. Her eyes started counting the exits. Would she have enough time to get back to her room, or would she have to go running through the woods in this dress? Could she fight her way out? Could she run? Could she escape?
Demoiselle, please,
Zithril asked with a voice that she could not trust and eyes that cut her with kindness.
Let us sit and have an honest conversation.
Forgive me, Your Highness, but I do not think honesty is something either of us are very good at, Ren said, as she tried to pull her wrist free from his grasp. He let her go, but kept his hand at the small of her back.
"Oh, I think you can be very good at honesty when you choose to be. It is I who needs the practice,"
he said as he guided her to one of the lounges in the corner. They reached the couches and Zithril shooed away a few amorous partygoers with a whistle and a snap of his fingers. He rearranged the pillows and gestured for her to sit. Ren remained standing.
"Demoiselle, I am not going to bite,"
Zithril chided from his place on the couch. "I would happily let you bite me if you promise not to arrest me," she countered, eyes bouncing from the prince to the doors. He clicked his tongue and shook his head.
"Arresting you would be no fun."
"That is not an answer."
"You never asked a question."
They held each other's gaze for one moment, maybe two, maybe a whole week passed as they looked into each other's eyes, and Rin wondered why her feet would not run. Finally, Zithril broke the silence with a laugh and a shake of his head.
"Tell me, Demoiselle, do you know how to read the truth in someone?"
"I've always been pretty good at telling when someone is lying, and I'm normally better at figuring out what they are lying about than I have been here." Her voice was cold and distant in her ears. Good, she thought to herself. The time for fake friendship had passed. She had willingly sat in this man's trap for too long. The prince shook his head.
No, not like that. Can you read the truth in someone?"
There were many subsets of my magic. There were soul healers, like Rita. There were dream walkers and thought thieves. Truth reading was a skill Rin had never bothered learning. She was already naturally gifted at detecting a lie, and the process of truth reading required a willing, or coerced, participant. Why bother forcing someone to tell her the truth when she could easily learn what they were trying to hide from her on her own given enough time? "I do not know what you are talking about," she said with a haughty sniff and another look around the room.
"Please sit,"
the prince said once again, patting the cushion next to him.
"And I will show you."
Ren weighed her options, saw that she ran out of good ones around the time she accepted this cursed job, and decided that sitting next to a prince was slightly less dangerous than going tearing through the woods in the middle of the night wearing a gown. She sat, and he smiled a smile that would have made a younger and stupider Ren melt right into the upholstery. He slowly slid his fingers across the sofa and took her hand. Silence settled between them for a moment as Zithril looked down at their fingers resting together on the couch. A tentative, nervous look clouded his confident features.
"I am very curious about you, Demoiselle, and I know you must be wondering things about me. What if we traded questions for questions?"
"What?" Ren scoffed. "You mean you would ask me something, and then I would get to ask you something?" Zithril shrugged.
"It only seems fair, but for this to work, your mind has to be open and willing."
Ren sighed and went over the mental list of what she knew and what she did not. She knew that Zithril suspected her of something. She did not know what he suspected her of. She knew Queen Brunora was leaving in the morning. She did not know where her client's necklace was. She knew she was in danger. However, she did not know how much danger she was currently in. She let out a small groan and gave a slow but steady nod. A relieved smile spread across the prince's face, like the hardest part of the evening was over, and it was all downhill from here.
"Good, very good,"
he said, squeezing her palm and asking,
"Do you feel that?"
A warm vibration started in their joined hands, small and gentle, like resting a hand against a piano as someone played a single note. "Yes."
"Good. We are off to a very good start. Now, to test the connection."
Zithril smiled at her, and Rin realized it was the first genuinely uncalculated expression she had seen on his face. It was excited and hopeful and boyish. The look might not have been dripping with confidence and seduction, but it was charming and infectious all the same. Rin found herself smiling back, and for a moment, she was an 8-year-old girl, hiding under the table, whispering secrets as the adults ate dinner.
"First, I will tell you a non-truth,"
Zithril said, straightening and looking her in the eye.
"I am the Prince of Artiel, and I am very happy to be sitting here with you tonight."
The warmth traveled up her arm, over her shoulder, and into her chest. It was a pleasant heat, like sun-baked boards under her bare feet in summer, or a bowl of soup between her hands on a cold night. She looked up into Zithril's expectant face, that wonderful smile beaming brighter.
"The truth feels nice, no?"
he asked.
"Now it is your turn. Tell me a known truth."
Rin found herself fumbling for a moment. "My name is... She stopped and shook her head.
"Is honesty really this hard for you, Demoiselle?"
he asked, eyebrows raising to tease.
"No,"
she chuckled, creasing her brow and shielding her eyes with her free hand. "I'm just having trouble coming up with something we both know and agree on."
"I suspect there are many things we will agree on,"
he soothed, giving her fingers a gentle press.
"Just try."
She smiled in amused frustration, throwing her head back and saying, "Well, this dress is blue, and black sometimes, and it is one of the finest things I've ever worn." She felt the warmth push out of her chest and back down her arm, like a wave on the beach. She could not see it. Still, her eyes followed its progression all the way down their hands and up to Zithril's face. He closed his eyes and breathed in before blinking and looking at her with a wicked grin.
"Now it is time for a non-lie."
He rolled his shoulders back and looked at her like a boy about to put a toad in his sister's bed.
"You are an unskilled and uncoordinated dance partner."
The gentle vibration in her hand became a stampede of ants. They zipped up her arm, thundering over her shoulder and into her ears. She squeaked and squirmed, trying to jump up from the seat and yank her hand away.
"No, Demoiselle,"
Zithril laughed, holding her firm by the hand and playfully pushing her back onto the couch.
"You cannot break the connection."
Rin turned and gave him a glare she normally reserved for Honor and the other children after they had been caught snooping in her room. "Travok's clothes are tastefully understated," she growled, and pushed the crawling, creeping insects out of her mind and down the back of Zithril's shirt. The elf prince arched his back, rolling on the sofa and gritting his teeth against the laughter that was threatening to escape.
"Fine, fine, you win, I yield. You are a wonderful dance partner. No one could keep their eyes off of you."
The warmth pulsed back up Rin's arm, and Zithril slowly relaxed back onto the couch, wiping his eyes with the knuckles of his free hand.
"Littrell and I used to play that game when we were children, telling each other lies, seeing who would hold on the longest."
A sad, distant smile flitted across his face as his eyes searched the room for two youngsters who had long stopped playing childish games. He cleared his throat and turned back to Rin.
"Would you like to ask the first question?"
Zithril graciously offered. "Are you going to hurt me?" Rin asked, without waiting or hesitation.
"Of course not,"
he reassured, the heat of the truth rolling over her, but Rin ignored it, determined not to let her guard down till she closed all the loopholes a well-practiced liar could slip through. "Not hurt me, or imprison me, or wipe my mind, or order someone else to do so, or harm me in any way."
"That is technically 5 questions, but since the answer is all the same, I will give you them all for free. No, I will not harm you, and I will not knowingly let harm come to you. And any secrets you share with me will stay on this sofa."
He was lounging across the pillows like the bored, entitled prince he was, booted feet crossed in front of him, head resting against the back of his seat. But he said each word like an oath as he looked deep into Rin's eyes. It was his eyes that told her the truth of his words. The heat running up her arm just confirmed it.
"Oh," Rin said,
slumping back against the couch, feeling deflated. She had been prepared to fight or flee, and now she was doing neither. The stone beneath her feet had turned to sand, and her brain felt muddled.
"Are you ready for my turn?"
Zithril asked. Rin gave a small nod, and he continued.
"Are you from White Silver?"
"No, not originally. But it has been my home for the past 8 or 9 years." It was more of an answer than she needed to give. She could have just said yes or no instead of giving a small part of her history to him, but it felt right to be open. She missed being open. She missed Rita and the family and the smell of the sea in her room, but most of all, she missed not hiding. But hiding was what she was good at. Hiding had kept her alive for 8 or 9 years. She could not give away her location now just because a pretty and surprisingly kind boy was holding her hand. Rin rolled her eyes. "What do you want from me?"
"A fair enough question that I will answer fully by the end of the night."
Zithril pursed his lips and squinted his eyes in thought before continuing.
"But for now, what I will say is I want to get to know you better. And I want you to get to know and trust me better."
Rin raised an eyebrow at the prince. "I am not sure that should count as a question."
"I have told no lie,"
Zithril said, gesturing to their linked hands and shrugging in feigned innocence.
"Now, let me have my turn. Why are you really in Altair?"
"I really am here to find a necklace."
"Really?"
Zithril asked, tilting his head in surprise.
"For your friend?"
"Yes, really. And no, not for a friend. I was hired to come here and retrieve it. And that counts as 2 questions, so now I get an extra one."
"I gave you 5 extra ones.
"Well, now we are playing by stricter rules," Rin smiled, tucking her legs up on the couch like a child as the prince sank into a frustrated pout. "As head of the admissions committee, why did you remove some of the records from earlier this year?" Zithril scoffed.
"I am not head of the admissions committee. Lithril and I traded responsibilities years back."
"Lithril is head of the admissions committee," Rin repeated, trying not to fall into Zithril's sulk. She was having trouble thinking of something that she wanted to do less than speak to Lithril tonight. Where would she be keeping notes from this committee?
"Probably her chambers,"
Zithril shrugged, before carrying on.
"Now, it is my turn. Are you a practitioner, specifically of mind magic?"
It was not a surprising question. Still, Rin froze and compulsively looked down at their hands, the warmth and the tingling vibration mixing against their palms. She could almost see the sensation, a yellow ball spinning and turning in their joined fingers. She'd learned to hold her cards close to her chest, to purposefully be underestimated, to never, ever show her hand. But she had no choice. She had to answer.
"I dabble in that field on occasion."
"I knew it!"
Zithril beamed, spinning to face her, smile growing wide and excited.
"I knew it. What do you practice? Can I guess?"
"You can, when it is your turn," Rin chided with her own smile, giving him a bop on the nose with her free hand to keep him from bouncing like a sugar-stuffed child on a feast day.
"Of course, of course,"
Zithril nodded, getting himself under control.
"After you, Demoiselle."
"When did you know I was a practitioner?"
"Well, I suspected after that misadventure in your mind when we first met. You saved me, didn't you?"
he asked, and then waved his free hand and shook his head.
"No, no, don't answer. That is not my question. Anyway, I knew that you were either very, very good or I was very, very lucky. But I knew for sure that you must at least be a little familiar with mental defense at dinner that night. Everyone else was affected by the rift. Even now, the lieutenant looks like a madman. The ambassador is bursting through his skin. The queen looks on the verge of physical collapse, but not you. The only way that could be possible is with a protection or a blessing.
But I have been feeling the rift, Rin admitted, thinking of the phantom voices from her past and the invisible hands around her neck. And I have done nothing intentionally to protect myself from its power. I do not even know how I would go about doing something like that.
Really? You hide your reaction very well.
Yes, really, and that counts as your question. Zithril laughed and swore, shaking a finger at Rin before she went on. When you said that could only be possible with a protection or a blessing just now, I know what a mental defense is, but what is this blessing?
The rift acts as a natural deterrent for visitors to Altria.
The prince begrudgingly began to explain.
No one can stand to be near it for long without protection. As you already know, my family is touched with the gift from the Eterosh. Once a year, we extend that blessing to our people. It is a small ceremony, but it protects them from the rift and its effects for most of the year.
There was trouble in his eyes as he answered, a cloud of memory and fear that had come across his face, blocking out the sun-bright rays of excitement that had danced there moments before. However, the cloud was fleeting, and he brushed it away with a shake of his head.
My turn at last, he said,
turning to Rin with a hungry smile.
So, what are you? What do you practice? Let me guess first,
he said, holding up a hand to forestall her answer as he thought out loud.
You are flexible and quick on your feet. You are good at pretending and hiding your feelings. Not a soul healer, then. And if you were a dreamwalker, I think you would have given me a harder time in my sleep. So, I will say, thought thief. Are you a thought thief?
There are some that would call what I did thought theft, but I have not practiced that particular profession in many years.
Aha! He crowed and bounced. Keep your voice down, Rin hissed, pulling him back down onto the couch.
People are staring.
I am the Crown Prince sitting and talking to a beautiful woman. People will always be staring, he said with a smirk. A thought thief under my own nose. How glamorous and exciting. The secrets you must have. Do you work for a specific kingdom, or are you a free agent? No, wait, I bet if you told me, you would have to kill me, right? Ha!
Rin sucked her teeth and rolled her eyes. She and her teacher had never stolen secrets in any official capacity, at least not to her knowledge. All of their jobs had been small, petty ones in the grand scheme of things. Still, they had been real and dangerous enough in the moment, and she was not prepared to admit to any of them now. So, she changed the subject.
I am not a beautiful woman, she corrected Zithril. Being beautiful is too memorable for my profession.
You're not beautiful, Zithril shrugged. Maybe not stunning, but not bad, not hideous.
Good. Hideous would also make me too memorable to be good at my job. He laughed at that, and then turned his full attention back to face her. Long ago, Rin had developed a habit of not squirming when people looked at her. Squirming, demurring, showing discomfort was another form of flinching, and flinching gave you away. So instead of giggling and asking Zithril what he was looking at, she met his eyes and raised an eyebrow. But even with her well-worn mask and well-practiced habits, her heart still skipped a beat as he reached forward to lightly brush a stray hair back from her eyes.
You have elfish features, you know. Do you know what your ancestry is?
He asked, light and curious.
Love only knows, Rin laughed.
My mother, well, there were rumors, but nothing certain. And I do not come from a family that keeps track of that sort of thing.
Could you find out?
He pressed. Rin was not sure when this volley of questions had turned from interrogation to game to conversation, but she no longer cared about whose turn it was or how many questions Zithril was asking in a row. Still, that look, that follow-up question, the way his body had gone tight, waiting to hear her answer,
Everything set her teeth on edge and made the back of her neck itch. "Why?" she asked, eyeing him. Zithril blew out his breath, pulled himself straight, and took both of her hands in his.
"This is my last question, Demoiselle, and then I promise I will tell you everything."
Once again, his eyes told her about his sincerity. They peered into her, begging her for something he had not yet asked for, and she did not understand. But the warmth that rushed out of him was intoxicating, and Rin longed to lean into that feeling, to wrap herself in truth and protection. Their faces were very close, she realized, a distance appropriate for sharing secrets and chaste kisses. The prince wetted his lips and leaned forward.
"What would you say if I asked you to marry me?"
Rin sat up fast, and the top of her head clipped Zithril on the chin.
"Ow!"
he cried, dropping one of her hands to rub his jaw, maintaining the connection with the other.
"Is that your answer?"
he asked, opening and closing his mouth a few times as he rubbed his chin.
"Have you lost your mind?" would be my answer. "Let me explain.
We have known each other for a handful of days, Zithril."
"And you have made a very good impression,"
he said with a jovial smile and a shrug. Rin just raised her favorite eyebrow.
"All right, let me explain," Zithril repeated,
holding up a hand to prevent any more questions.
"I have to find a wife, and time is fast running out. Whoever I marry would need to meet certain qualifications. Ideally, she would also need to be someone that I like, and most importantly, she would need to agree to certain flexibilities in our marriage."
"And I fit the part?" Rin asked, with pursed lips and skeptical eyes.
"Yes, I think you might,"
Zithril answered, a plea in his voice. Rin was not moved. "I have several questions, Your Highness, starting with, why do you need someone to marry right now? Followed by, why not marry one of your own people? And what exactly do you mean by flexibilities within our marriage?" Zithril rubbed his eyes with his free hand and let out an exhausted sigh.
"I told you I would tell you everything. Will you sit there and listen?"
"I am all ears," she replied, voice flat. He let out another sigh and then began his story.
5,000 years ago, at the end of the Great War, the Itirashi generals, whom my sister and I are named for, gave an etheric woman to the King of Artier in thanks for his loyalty.
Rin scoffed and opened her mouth to say something, but Zithril held up a finger.
"You said you'd listen to everything."
So she rolled her eyes and gestured for him to continue.
"The king fell in love with this etheric woman and made her his demon retronie, the official mistress of the king. He had one daughter with this woman, and that daughter was touched with some of her mother's abilities. The king was thrilled. The people of Artier were thrilled. They had always known they were chosen by the gods, and now here was this child who proved that fact. The king also had one son with his wife, the queen, the official son and heir of Artier. And that was when a thought entered the king's mind. What if the rulers of Artier, not just my bastards, were the ones meant to be touched by the gods? It was, of course, too late for this generation. His son was slated to rule, and this king was not about to upset his dynasty just because he wanted a gifted monarch on the throne. But his son did not yet have a wife, and both children were of a certain age. Any child that came from that union would more than likely have a gift, and so the king married his children to each other. I do not know what the people of the time thought of this, but it soon became common practice. Whomever sat on the throne would have one official heir with the man or woman they were married, and they would have another with their official consort. the children would marry each other, and thus the gift would stay in the royal bloodline. But all blood gifts fade eventually, even ones meant for royalty.
Rin felt the bottom go out of her stomach, and the skin along her face start to crawl. She began to look around the room for Zithril's hidden half-sibling and Lithril's betrothed, but stopped as a sudden thought occurred to her.
But there are two of you, she asked, and Zithril nodded.
Yes, twins. What are we meant to do with twins? But I am getting ahead of myself. So, the gift the Itrash had bestowed upon us had started to fade. They noticed it within 5 generations. And by the time my grandfather sat on the throne, the only true thing to mark him as different was his blindness and his tissue-thin skin. This might not have been so bad. Royal families have hidden far worse from their people, but they could not hide this because of the blessing. The blessing was getting weak, and the people of Altair were starting to hear the rift in the back of their minds. They were starting to think, maybe it is a sign. Maybe this mad family is no longer meant to rule. Maybe Altair was never truly chosen. And then a miracle happened. The queen, my grandmother, gave birth to a twin boy and girl. My father, Ferge, and my mother, Bellaflora.
Rin sat in stunned and hollow silence.
Zithril,
she started, but he pushed ahead with his dark family history lesson.
The mad thing was that it worked. Lithril and I were born, yet another sign from the gods that this action was just. And we are the most powerful of our family in 3 generations.
He laughed at a joke that no one had said, and rested his forehead on his fists, his elbows on his knees. Rin watched him and felt the honesty of his pain in the heat between their fingers. But there were holes in his story, and she had questions she did not know how to ask. She cleared her throat, trying to find a way to begin.
This has been going on for 5,000 years?
Yes, 10 generations.
And you do not agree with these marriages?
Zithril's head snapped up, insult burning in his eyes.
In my experience, Rin tried to soothe, a person's environment shapes their morals. You have grown up with this history. It would not be unreasonable for a person to assume this was how things were meant to be done. It is unique and brave of you to go looking for other options.
He smiled at her words and raised their still clasped hands to his lips, pressing a kiss of thanks into her knuckles.
You flatter me, demoiselle. And, as you know, with me, flattery will get you everywhere. You are right. Perhaps if the gift had never started to fade, perhaps if my grandfather had not started to show signs of madness and illness, perhaps my people would have never doubted this tradition. But they did doubt, and when my grandfather married my mother to my father, it caused quite an uproar within these walls. If Lithuel and I had not been born so soon after, I think there would have been a full revolt. As it is, there are just factions within the kingdom. People wanting to cling to tradition, and people longing for change. And then, of course, there was my mother.
He sighed, and once again let his head fall. Rin could almost see the memories dancing above his mind, saw the loss in him, the loneliness, the weight of an inescapable and dreaded future. His plain feelings made him look young and fragile. Rin wanted to scoop that small boy into her arms and rock him to sleep, to chase away the nightmares with songs and stories, to give him a promise of protection that she already knew she could not make. But instead, she just gently squeezed his fingers and waited for him to go on. At last, Zithril said,
My mother loved her brother with her whole heart, but she hated her husband. She did not want to be married to him. It disgusted and disturbed her, and she did not bother pretending to me or my sister that she was a willing participant in anything a marriage like that required of her. From almost the moment we were born, she was fighting to have us both betrothed to other people. She fought so hard to have Littrell sent to another kingdom, but I think that fight tired her. She died before she could save either of us. And now Littrell does not even want to be saved.
He paused, choking on the memory of his mother and the knowledge of what his sister, the future queen, would require of him. Rin thought she saw rage in the set of his shoulders, the fear burning at the corner of his eyes. He swallowed against the lump in his throat and went on.
Because of the controversy stirred up by my parents' union, I have been granted a small window to find someone else to marry besides Littrell. But this is easier said than done. There is not a woman in this kingdom brave enough to marry me and openly defy my father, and I have not been allowed to travel, one of the reasons I suspect Littrell took over my responsibilities on the admissions committee. I had almost lost hope when I heard word of the queen coming to visit. I knew Queen Brenora would not be an option for me. She belongs to her people, and I need to stay with my kingdom. But she was sure to bring Lady Morningstar. Surely my father and sister could not question me taking an actual Etheric for wife. If anything, that would strengthen the gift. But almost from the moment I saw her, I knew she would not do. She is kind, but she is not my kind of partner. Besides, her attentions are clearly elsewhere, and she does not appear to be the type to allow for flexibilities in a marriage.
You keep using that word, flexibility, Rin said with a teasing grin. Can I assume your heart belongs to someone else? Zithril gave Rin a darting, sheepish smile that brought the sparkle back to his cheeks. The look made her heart go tight. She was not in love with the prince by any stretch of the imagination. She did not even know him, and Rin had stopped believing in romance long before she had stopped believing in her mother's stories. But still, it had been nice to pretend for a few days, for a couple of dances, for a few questions shared with a boy during a party. She locked those feelings away and playfully pushed her shoulder into his.
Marry her then, she smiled. Marry her and run away from here. God surround me, I would even be willing to help you escape.
I cannot leave here. I love my people, and we have been hidden here for too long. We are dying here. Dying, hidden from the rest of the world. There is a reason you and the delegation have not been outside the royal wing. My people will be crushed under the weight of our own children soon, or die trying to feed them. But I can change this. I can help if I stay.
Rin tipped her head back to the ceiling and let out a quiet groan. You will kill yourself trying to do this. I have met your sister. Her reign is not going to be a gentle one for your people.
If I die, I die with them, screaming for change with my last breath.
Rin laughed at Zithril's dramatics. And what of your love? Will she die with you, by your side as your wife? Is she willing to save you and make herself publicly known?
I cannot marry my heart,
he answered, eyes darting from Rin to the back wall.
Why not? She asked. Is this girl really willing to let you marry your sister or a stranger to save her own skin?
Of course not, Zithril gritted out. But marriage is not an option for us.
Again, his eyes would not stay on her, flitting over her shoulder to the back wall.
Why not? Why would marrying not? Oh.
Rin brought herself up short as the last puzzle piece slotted into place. Zithril rolled his eyes at her and stifled a laugh. Rin also had to laugh at how slow she had been as she turned to follow Zithril's gaze to the tall, dark man in blue and gold leaning against the far wall. She had noticed him, of course, at the picnic, at other functions, but noticing someone and seeing them are two different things. Darker skin was not uncommon amongst the elves. After all, they were descendants of the Fae, and the Fae were a nomadic people who were notoriously less than picky with their lovers. Still, the light that beamed from elvish faces tended to turn most skin tones pale, turning white skin to chalk and brown skin to dust. The man standing behind Rin was the exception. He had midnight dark skin, and the light that shone across it turned him into a living embodiment of a starlit sky. Slim but athletically built, and tall for an elf, he stood out in this room full of suns and moons and skin shining like diamonds. "He's beautiful," she breathed.
"I know,"
Zithril said from behind her. She did not have to see the prince to hear the smile in his voice.
"And he hasn't realized he can do better than me yet. So, now that you know everything, will you do it? Will you marry me?"
Rin turned back to face her friend, not knowing what to say. Her hesitation must have shown on her face because Zithril cut in, speaking over her in a rush.
"We would want to raise whatever child you gave birth to together, as the three of us, or four, if you wish to take another lover. And Elliot and I have already agreed that children do not have to come from me to be ours. And the best part is whatever children we have, you can teach them mind magic. People would assume that they are touched, and we could fool everyone and end this horrible tradition now. I could give you such a wonderful life. The three of us could have such a wonderful life together. Please, Demoiselle. Please, Rin."
No one had ever given Rin a declaration of love before. She did not live the kind of life that included marriage proposals, and she had long let go of the dream that something like this would ever come her way. And now that it was here, sitting shiny and golden in her lap, how could she turn it down? How could she say no to him? He was right. She could save him and his lover and whatever children came after them. She could grow to love him. She could grow to love both of them. She saw a life here filled with privilege and joy and safety. But even now, she knew it was a mirage. Whatever woman Zithril took to wife would not be safe so long as the king was alive and Lithril was determined to carry on the traditions of her forefathers. Instead of a pampered princess, Rin would be target practice for the Queen of Altair when she took the throne. Not to mention the fact that Rin would more than likely never leave the Hidden Kingdom if she accepted Zithril's terms. She would never be able to visit her family. Rita and the children would most certainly never be welcome here. Rin looked at the prince, into his soft, blue, begging eyes. He was so in love, so desperate. Would he even let her say no? Would he let her leave? He did not seem the type, but they never did. And he could keep her here. He had that power. Cold panic dripped down her spine and gripped her heart as she asked, "Am I allowed to say no?" His face switched from hopeful to confused, as if he understood her words but not the order she had said them in. Then slowly, like winter's chill creeping across the kitchen floor, he began to understand. The prince looked across the hall with his fresh eyes. He saw the wealth, the glamour, the servants he controlled. Rin felt his heart break through his fingertips as he once again brought her hands to his lips and brushed her knuckles with a kiss.
"Of course you can say no, Demoiselle,"
he whispered. Rin had just enough time to feel the warmth of truth pour over her before he dropped her hand and broke the connection. The Prince of Altair leaned forward, elbows on his knees, the heels of his hands pressing into his eyes. He could have been crying, or his eyes could have just been tired from all the excitement. There was no way for the average partygoer to tell. All the same, Rin scooted closer and began to rub slow circles on his back.
"I am sorry,"
he said to the floor.
"I was desperate, and I didn't realize the trap I was making till I had already built it. And by the time I was finished, it didn't look like a trap to me. It just looked like..."
"An invitation?" Rin asked. her voice dry and mocking.
I suppose so.
He laughed a bitter laugh before going on.
I would never force you. I do not want to be the kind of man who forces people.
I am sorry, Rin whispered, and meant every word. I am so, so sorry. But I have a life waiting for me back in White Silver. People who I love and depend on, and who depend on me. I could not leave or forget them. Besides, you must know Lithril would try to kill me. She tried to poison me earlier today.
Yes, Marcite mentioned something about that.
Zithril straightened, looking out at the dance floor.
Is that your final answer then?
It is, Ren replied, hating herself for her cowardice. It does not have to be yours, though. Please, Zithril, I could get both of you out.
I will not leave my people. I can fix this.
He burned with determination, and the normally fluid, graceful lines of his face looked as immovable as granite. Have you thought that you could help your people from outside your kingdom? Run away to White Silver. Charm the nobility there. Get them to send aid or an army or something. You do not have to choose this fate. Zithril said nothing, just continued to stare unseeing out at the party, lips pressed into the knuckles of his hands. Rin sighed and resisted the urge to shake him. There was absolutely no reasoning with idealists and revolutionaries. He would not be moved, and she had done all she could do. Rin bent down to lower her face to the prince's peripheral vision. I will not marry you, but I can give you an alibi for tonight. He turned to look at her, interest sparking in his eyes.
What do you mean?
It is not much, but I would be more than willing to let all of Altair believe we spent the night together. It would give me the freedom to go poking around, and you and Elliot could use the evening and my room, however you wish. For a moment, she thought he would turn her down. Their conversation had changed something in him. No, Rin corrected herself. It had revealed something in him. The dread, the shame, the anxiety, the dark cloud that had chased them through her mind always lived inside this prince. Their conversation had just brought it out into the open, to hover around his face and squash him into the sofa. However, Zithril was stronger than whatever he had kept locked inside him. Rin saw it, saw the moment he stuffed the cloud back into a box and decided to focus on the evening in front of him and how it could be changed for the better.
A worthy consolation prize? How do you want to do this?
Rin straightened and fanned the skirts of her dress. You get a little too handsy with me on this couch. I slap you and go ask Elliot to dance to make you jealous, or whatever these people want to think. And you come and interrupt us halfway through the song. I will tell him where to meet us when the music is over.
Sounds perfect. Starting now?
Whenever you are ready, Rin replied, barely getting the words out before Zithril had her pinned to the couch. She heard the rustling of fabric as his lips grazed her skin, mouth working its way down her neck to the top of her dress. She knew it was an act, and she was well past desiring him. Still, it had been so long since someone had touched her like this. Passionately, sweetly, fiercely, gently. It was hard not to get lost in the sensation, not to melt into the lips at her collarbone or grab his hands and move them lower on her waist.
Feel free to stop me whenever you are ready, demoiselle.
He murmured as his kisses traveled lower down her neckline.
That is, unless you are rethinking my offer, we could go get Elliot together and go find a private room to celebrate in.
She kneed him in the solar plexus and dumped the prince gasping and choking on the floor.
Fresh,
she hissed, as she tried to slap the smile off his face. It did not work. She could feel his smirk on her back as she stormed across the dance floor. Elliot's eyes were wide as Rin approached him, staring over her shoulder as his lover sprawled on the floor. He looked down into her gold eyes, and for a minute, Rin thought she might be able to smell fear on him.
Demoiselle, I...
he sputtered, but she extended a hand and cut through him. Dance with me, Elliot. Zithril thinks we should get to know each other. He gave a stiff nod and led her to the dance floor. Rin looked up at the taller man. She felt his rigid hand clamp down on her back as the first notes of a waltz began. He was nervous, she decided, and he was the kind of man whose nerves translated into stiff silences. Unfortunately for him, Rin was not the kind of woman who broke silences.
"What did you say?"
he asked, when the quiet had become too thick to stomach. "No," she whispered. "I'm sorry, but I just..."
"It is all right,"
Elliot interrupted.
"I told him not to. It is an impossible situation to put a person in."
"I am still sorry I cannot help him in the way he wants." Rin paused, wondering what she should do, wondering what she should say. What would Rita say?
"You could leave. Just because he is too stubborn to leave does not mean you have to stay."
She felt the fingers of Elliot's hand flex along her spine, felt the frustration in his grip.
"He will not leave his people, and I will not leave him."
"Why not?" Rin pressed, looking up into her dance partner's face, working to read his expression. She did not have to work very hard. His eyes grew cold, and his mouth grew thin.
"Why will I not abandon the man that I love to an abusive, incestuous marriage to a woman who will probably kill him as soon as he gives her enough children to continue this horror show of a kingdom?"
"Oh, good, you know about Lithrell. I was worried I was going to have to warn you about her." At that, Elliot let out a bark of laughter.
"No, I know about her."
Rin let him take her through a turn before asking, "Does Zithril know about her?" Elliot's brow creased, and he bit his cheeks. At last, he said,
"I am not sure. I know he loves her, and he has not said anything to me specifically, but he also keeps me hidden. You see, the royalty of Artier might have had one official consort, but it is not unusual for them to have one or even several unofficial consorts. It would not be shameful or even strange for our people to know about me, but he is insistent. I must stay hidden."
"And you think this is because the prince is scared of his sister?" Elliot let out a breath that might have been a laugh in another life.
"I am not sure Zithril ever lets himself be scared of anything, but yes, I think in his own way he is very worried about his sister, though he has not admitted to himself that she is a danger."
There was a tremor in the night sky of his skin. Not a crack, not a sob, not a tear. The life this man lived and the secrets he kept would not allow for anything so obvious. Just a tremor, to pay homage to the pressure of the life he was currently living.
"I live in stolen moments, you know,"
Elliot said, more to himself than the woman he was dancing with.
"That is all he can give me. Stolen moments, stolen glances, the accidental brush of his hand, or the chance meeting in a stairwell. He keeps promising me a whole life, a whole feast of moments. But I think we will always be living off body crusts."
He was staring into space, into the nothing of the room around him. But Rin knew when his eyes landed on the prince. She could feel the spark go through his body and the desire beating in his chest.
"I'm sorry,"
he said, rubbing his hand over his face.
"I must be tired. I do not know why I told you all that."
"Think nothing of it," Rin replied, waving her hand through the air, shooing away his concerns. "Soon I will be in Whitesilver, without a soul to tell your secrets to." At the mention of Rin returning to Whitesilver, Elliot gave a small, lopsided smile and continued to stare over her head and say nothing. She mentally kicked herself for reminding him that she was choosing to leave him and his lover to this uncertain and unhappy fate. Then she cleared her throat to speak. "In about 30 seconds, the prince is going to steal this dance from you. When he does, go outside and wait at the entrance of the hedge maze. I will bring him to you there."
"Another stolen moment, then?"
Elliot asked. "It is not stolen. I'm giving it to you, and it will be the whole night if you want it." Another tremor crossed his face, followed by a warm, grateful smile.
"Thank you, Demoiselle."
"My pleasure," Rin replied, and meant it. Then,
She was struck by a sudden thought. I do little favors like this for my clients all the time back in White Silver. Arrange meetings, help them out of troubling situations.
Really?
Elliot asked, one corner of his mouth rising.
Are you good at your job?
Not to brag, but I am very good. I do not even have to advertise. People find me through word of mouth. Most of my clients seek me out at the ship's wreck.
The ship's wreck? Huh? What is that?
A pub. Best spirits in the city. If you ever find yourself in White Silver, you should give it a visit.
Maybe I will, Elliot said with a smirk. So, how much do you charge these clients? Do you make them pay for all they are worth? Or do you ever take a job out of the kindness of your heart?
Rin giggled. If I know they can afford it, I make them pay through the nose, she said, staring pointedly at the gold buttons on Elliot's cuffs and the matching buckles on his shoes. At this, Elliot threw his head back and let out a genuine rolling laugh that filled Rin's chest and broke her heart. It reminded her of Breckus, and she knew instantly why Zithril had fallen in love with this man. He looked down on her with a wide smile that looked like coming home after a hard day's work.
It is a shame you are not a stupider woman. I think I would have enjoyed making a life with you. May I cut in?
Asked Zithril's voice. On cue, Elliot dropped Rin's hand with a bow and walked out the doors and into the night. She never had a chance to tell him that she would have enjoyed making a life with him as well.
You've been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston, narrated by K.E. Preston. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook at kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. If you've really enjoyed what you've heard, there is bonus content available on our Patreon. Every dollar there allows me and my family to keep doing what we love, which is sharing this story with you. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction written by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help by Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.